Good afternoon. I hope you hear me well. So, this work started with a master thesis of my co-author, Marius Walter. And I said, Marius, we have to measure dot gains somehow. And so he did a great work about it, and I just continued about it. So here's the results. The motivation from this work comes from reducing the costs for fitting printer models to a printer setup. So if you have, in this example, a 5 grid point printer model, and you want to model a 4 inks printer, you would end up with 625 patches, and that's approximately a book page. Unfortunately, the expenses for fitting a printer model increase exponentially with the number of inks that you have to model. So, same printer model with 7 inks would end up in more than 78,000 patches, which is a single bed. So, how can we reduce this? One idea was to have a closer look at what's happening during the printing process. We start with the printer control values. They're transformed into a digital dot pattern. This is printed, so the dots slightly change their shape. Unfortunately, that print pattern we will never see because the light enters the paper and is spread a little and exits at a different location, so that pattern is slightly blurred. We call it optical dot gain or Yule-Nielsen effect, and this actually is what gives us the reflectance that we see and that we measure. So usually printer models that are regression-based take this whole process as a whole and just model it as one, and they have a number of parameters that have to be fitted. If we want to reduce the number of parameters, a solution could be to divide those effects into two models. That means, for example, a mechanical dot gain model and an optical dot gain model. Again, we have some parameters A and B, but if the sum of all of these parameters is less than the sum of the parameters C, we had reached our goal. In addition, if the optical dot gain model, for example, is only depending on the type of paper that you have used, you could use the results that you already had for different printer setups without, again, acquiring the data. Okay, I said this is about light scatter. What is light scatter? So, to describe this, there are different spread functions. For example, if you have a point-shaped illumination, so a single spot of light that enters into the paper will be transported to a different location and will exit the paper there. So we have a distribution of reflectances that we also call the point spread function for the light. We could also have a line-shaped illumination, accordingly the line spread function, or a half-plane illumination forming an edge, so it's the edge spread function. Very easy to understand, I think. So there are some pros and cons for these for using these functions. Actually, the point spread function is very desirable because it has a very good description. It gives information about the scatter in two directions. It's also very easy to apply. Unfortunately, it's not very feasible for measurement because we have only a little amount of light. It's only a point. Same is valid for that line, little amount of light. And in addition, we only have description in one direction about the scatter. If we have a closer look at the edge spread function, it's the same. We also only have description in one direction, but it's quite easy to realize. There's one advantage about these functions. We can quite easily transform them into each other. So there are equations to go from one function to the other, but we have to assume that we have isotropic scattered. So that means the point spread function does not change over the angle. In terms of measurement, we use the edge spread function for the measurement because it's the easiest to realize. And then we use the line spread and the point spread function for calculations. Why don't we just stay at the edge spread function and use that? So why did we all that effort to go to the point spread function? The reason is that we have really a good description here. We have, if you follow the blue line, you have some radial descriptions. So in literature, you find different ansatz functions for that. For example, the blue line here is a Gaussian ansatz. We have an exponential ansatz, it's the green one, and two different rational ansatzes, the orange and the red one. And also, if you imagine that hut, cut it through, you will have something like isolines, which could look like this. They give us some hint about the isotropy of the scatter. If we have defined such a point spread function, we can really easily apply it. For example, if we have a digital dot pattern, we could convolute it with a point spread function and get a blurred image. That's it. Okay, how do we measure it now? I said we measure the edge spread function. So basically, the measurement setup is a microscope with a camera, halogen lamp. We have a special sample holder, I will come to that. And we insert a knife edge, a razor blade edge. This is a schematic sketch of the setup. You have the halogen lamp, which is projected onto the sample. Here, this is a beam splitter. So all the reflected light passes the beam splitter and is detected in the camera. We inserted the razor blade, and we also have a razor blade focus, it's a lens system. Up to here, it's not very new, we can find that in literature, but we made some important improvements, which is always very hard to realize is the focusing. You have one is the sample focus has to be in plane, and also the edge focus has to be okay. And for doing so, we have a sample holder. Here's the small sheet of paper. Here's the hole where we can look through. And here we have a reference. This is a first surface mirror. This means all the light is directly reflected at the first surface and almost nothing goes into the material. Both are pressed against the bottom of that black plate here, which is very, very even and also parallel to the microscope stage on which it's located. So we can easily slide that sample holder in this direction, do the focusing on the first surface mirror, and then switch to the sample and make our measurements. The second improvement is that we can rotate about this axis, which is also this axis. So we can do angular measurements. Okay. Here are two pictures that we usually take. So one is the reference, one is the sample. And we can easily see that focusing in that image is almost impossible. You will never know if the blur comes from the scatter or from being out of focus. Here, the focus is much easier to see, so it's quite a neat edge. some image processing. Since we align the edge with the rows of the camera, we can just take the average along edge direction, and we get those two edge spread functions. And we assume that this one is the best we can achieve. So we don't go from the ideal case of a step function, but we take this one as the best to achieve edge. Okay. Before we go on with the calculations, we said we have to have isotropic scatter. Is that true? If we rotate the sample and always calculate characteristic length, for example, the distance where the edge spread function drops from 50 to 10%, and always plot that on the angles, we get some polar plots. And if they are circles, it's perfect isometry, isotropy. And what we can see here, we have three papers. LumiArt and LumiSilk are two coded papers. Maxi Offset is an uncoded paper. And the both coded papers are almost circles, so they're very close to isotropic scatter. The uncoded paper, it's the green line, it's a little bit deviated from isotropy, but it's not very significant. You can see here and here there are some slight deviations. So we assume we can say, yes, paper is isotropically scattering. Good. What do we do with those two functions? As I said, the gray one is the reference, and we say it's the best we can achieve as edge. So we want to have some calculations to come from the best to achieve to the actual sample. How do we do that? We use both images. We take the reference image and we blur it. And we blur it based on those point spread functions that I already showed you. So we calculate the line spread function, and if we convolute that line spread function with our reference image from the mirror, we get a blurred image. So we convolute it here, have that blurred image, which is a theoretical image we could capture. And we compare it with a sample image in terms of root mean square deviation. Do some optimization, and in the end we came out with an approximation for our sample. The root mean square deviations as a measure for the goodness of our fit show that, so these are always the first ones, are the Gaussian ansatzes. They have poorest performance. A second is always the exponential, also not doing very well. And the both rational ansatzes, they're not so good, not so bad. What does that mean in terms of our approximations? Again, please remember the gray one is the mirror, and so the reference image, and the black one is the sample image. We have to have a closer look at those two regions because they're very critical. So what we can see, the blue is the Gaussian and the green is the exponential. They stay quite far away from the sample. And the rational ansatzes, red and orange, they smoothly fit this curve. Also here, it's not that clear here, but still, those rational ansatzes perform better. Okay, just to have a clue if we are going in the right direction or if we are doing totally wrong, we had some simple color calculations. We said, okay, we want to have something close to our measurement device, so typical spectrophotometer. So we say, light falls onto our sample in 0 degree, have no surface effects, we have no scatter in the ink, and the dot is a perfect cylinder. Then light goes into the paper, is scattered to somewhere else, and it comes out in 45 degrees. So that's a very simple model for our measurement device, how it measures the color. And we did two color calculations, one including that paper scatter and one without. And we also had a printed offset sheet where we could measure with a spectrophotometer some halftones. And here are the results. These are again the three papers that you already know, the two coated and the one uncoated paper, and we measured 20, 40, and 60% black. And as you can see, the blue are the delta E of AB values for the difference between the measured data and that calculation, and they are higher than the delta E between that and that, except for that value. So, although this is a very rough model, we could already improve the prediction. Okay, here's the conclusion. We introduced a setup that for measuring anisotropic light scattering paper that has some improved focusing in the first place, and in the second, it can be rotated about the optical axis of the microscope to allow for anisotropic measurements. We found that the scatter properties of paper are almost isotropic. We have, from our ansatz functions, we have best performance for the two rational ansatzes, and we could also improve our color prediction with that measurements. Some look into the future, or not really into the future, because the first point we already implemented, we changed the camera, we have a CCD camera now, we changed the illumination from the broad band halogen to a very narrow band green LED, so we can maybe have some clue about the middle spectrum, maybe make measurements with blue and red LED too. It would be very nice to really have a 2D description of the point spread function. We want to use our results in printer models to see how they work. And last but not least, we plan to build a database with different papers and the results to, so that everyone can use the results. Okay, thank you for your attention.
Do we have any questions?
Thank you for exceptionally clear paper. When you try to determine the point spread function by curve fitting, essentially,
yeah.
Here's one MTF, here's another MTF, or a point spread function.
Yeah, yeah.
Had you considered another approach, seeing how that you seem to have more or less isotropic circumstances, take the point spread function of the substrate, you know, where you have a slightly blurred image, calculate its effective MTF, and do the same for the other, which is a combination of the first MTF plus the MTF of the scattering, and then divide out the MTF of the substrate to come up with an MTF and then convert it back to a point spread function and then do your comparisons. Had you thought of that?
I think, if I remember correctly, you have to do a Fourier transform.
Yes.
For getting the MTF. And we always had problems with the Fourier transform.
Is that because of the noise of the substrate paper? Yeah, and so that was a follow-up question. Once you've sort of determined what you think the point spread function is, and you can mathematically model it, then you can go back with the model and do a regression analysis, which will just give you the parameters of the, you know, the mathematical function, and that gets rid of the noise completely. And then you can see if that function gives you a good result.
Yeah. So, of course, there's still a lot of a lot we can do with this algorithm here. No, sorry. We already worked on just setting the ansatzes completely aside and have some linear programming, but that again, we have too much freedom for it. So there we have to make some more assumptions. And the nice thing about this here is that we actually have only one parameter.
Yeah, and that's what's good for modeling. It gives you one or two parameters, and then you're free of noise. Then you can go back and make your comparisons to see if there's, you know, if it's still a good fit.
Yeah.
But it's very nice work. Thank you.
Thank you.